Good day, everyone. My name is John Nelson, the head bookkeeper of the Colson Packet Company in Yankton, Dakota Territory. Now, being a bookkeeper for a steamboat line may not sound like a very exciting job, but before that, I worked on the Missouri River steamers for almost 40 years. So folks are always asking me about life on the Missouri. They think there's some sort of adventure, excitement, and romance about life on the river. Well, the truth is, the river is dangerous. And probably the most dangerous thing on the river is the snags. I'll bet you they've sunk more steamers than all other hazards combined. Now, a snag is nothing more than a tree stump, but it's the broken off stump of a big cottonwood or some other tree that washed into the river during a flood. All the branches are gone, and it's just that jagged stump, maybe 10 or 20 feet long. The roots are all packed with clay and rocks that sort of anchor it to the riverbed, and the current has turned it around so as the nasty end is pointing downstream, ready to impale a steamer headed upstream under full power. Some snags show above the surface of the river, and there's no excuse for hitting one of those. Some of them we call sawyers. They're not anchored real solid, and they sort of bob up and down like a steam-powered sawmill. The real dangerous ones are the ones we can't see, just below the surface. That's when the pilot has to read the river. Watch for that telltale ripple that says there's something dangerous below. When the weather's calm, that's usually not too hard. But when a wind kicks up, it can hide those ripples, or even make ripples where there isn't even a snag. Sometimes a snag is shallow enough to rip the bottom out of a boat, but deep enough to show no hint on the surface. Even the best of pilots can be fooled sometimes. Back in 1870, I signed on to the North Alabama as head clerk for a late season trip with supplies for army posts and Indian reservations upriver. It was late October, and I knew there was a chance of getting iced in somewhere for the winter. And most years, I'd be heading for New Orleans about this time, but I had an investment opportunity and needed some cash. Captain Abe Townsend was master of the North Alabama, and Jim McGarrick was the pilot. North Alabama was about 6 years old, had started out as the Virginia Barton, served the Union Army during the war between the states. But by 1870, she'd been renamed and was owned by the Northwest Transportation Company of Sioux City. At that time, Sioux City was the main railroad to river transfer point for freight headed west. The company planned on making a good profit on the government contract and promised the crew extra pay for the late trip. Well, we set out from Sioux City on the morning of October 27th, and the roosters, the deckhands, they were just getting the last of the cargo stowed as we got underway. After supper, I finished my bookwork, finished logging in the cargo, verifying the crew roster. I felt the boat start to turn to port, making a crossing. That means following the main channel as it zigs across the whole expanse of the river. I had just put my feet up on my desk and leaned back with a cup of coffee when suddenly there was a tremendous crash and I was thrown to the deck. My tin cup flew from my hand, hit the wall, and clattered to the deck, spattering coffee everywhere. The boat had come to a complete and nearly instantaneous stop. Well, I picked myself up and stepped out of my office with a pretty good idea of what had just happened. I walked forward on the boiler deck gangway, and sure enough, we'd hit a snag, and a big one. Done a mighty fine job of it, too. The impact had lifted the snag, and it now protruded several feet above the main deck, having ripped a hole about 8 feet long and 2 feet wide through both the hull and the deck. Well, there wasn't much to do at that point but launch the skiffs and get ourselves ashore and get word back to Sioux City. In about a half hour, the North Alabama was resting on the riverbed, main deck just awash, never to move again. In a couple of days, another boat showed up to salvage the cargo. Some of the flour and some of the other goods had gotten a little wet, and a couple of whiskey barrels were busted, but all of the deck and hull cargo was recovered. The company figured the boat to be worth about $12,000, which I think was a bit high for a boat that age. The company hadn't insured the boat nor the cargo, and they ended up having to stand the loss. The boilers and engines were salvaged, and the cargo continued on to the destinations. Well, by the time the cargo had been transferred to the new boat, I decided I really didn't need to make that trip nor the investment, and headed south, which probably would have been safer in the first place. Next spring, when I passed the site on the brand new Nellie Peck, the wreck had changed the channel around the island. All that was left of the North Alabama was the main deck and hull. Whatever superstructure the scroungers hadn't taken, the spring rise had swept away. And thinking back on it, I suppose we were all lucky. The company lost a boat and some money, but no one got hurt or killed, like happened so many times on the river. The company men risked their money, but the steamboat men risked their lives. And I guess that's just life on the Missouri. Thanks for listening.